So we are holding on page 66 in Chagiga, Ois Yud Aleph. So yes, having been talking all this time about Maisa Merkava, now it's time to talk about what happened about great Chachamim who got involved with Maisa Merkava. So Gemara says, Tanan Abanan, Abon Nichnesu L'Pardes. There were four Chachamim who went into the Pardes. Pardes literally means an orchard. So it means Gan Eden, it means a very high level of connection with Elokus. There are places in Chassidus where it talks about it means that they went up to Olam HaYitzira. Now you think about it, you know, we would think, okay, big deal, Yitzira is only one, there's only one world up, but we got to realize that there's an infinite, to us, there's an almost unbridgeable gap between one Olam and the next. So yeah, that to go up one Olam, that we would think, okay, big deal, you know, you have three, two more to go, but it's a tremendous jump. So Rashi says they went in there al yedei shem. Nichnasu l'rakia. Rashi says olu l'rakia al yedei shem. They went up to the heavens using a shame of Hashem. Tosfos adds also they didn't literally go l'mayla, but they felt as though they had gone l'mayla. Hakosev brings over here a couple of long things on this subject. One from the Oruch, one from Reb Hai Goin, that provides some detail on it. There are Sfarim on the subject called Pirkei Hecholos that deal with some of the details of how a person would go about getting to these levels and when what they experienced over there. So Reb Hai in particular was asked about this whole Gemara over here, and he explains that when we're saying over here that you're using Shemus of Hashem, really what it means is what you're doing is they would do all kinds of things. They would fast, they would meditate, et cetera, in order to clear their mind of anything else so that they could perceive high levels of things in the various Hecholos. And that's, so again, this, some of the details of what they experienced and what they go about doing is described in these Sfarim, such as Pirkei Hecholos. The Arizal, by the way, writes that in our times, and even in his times already, we shouldn't do such things, he says, because in particular, we don't have the ability to be completely Tahor. We don't have Par Aduma ashes anymore, so therefore, we don't have the ability to be completely Tahor. With that said, of course, we have, for example, the Baal Shem Tov had Aliyah and Neshama. You have other Rebbeim that it's recorded of. So apparently there still is a way, although maybe Aliyah and Neshama is different than Nichnasu L'Pardes. It's not like we really have a way of knowing one way or the other. That ever points out, by the way, in a Hadron on the Rambam, there's a difference between Nichnasu L'Pardes, which we're saying was a very hazardous thing, and three of the four Chachamim didn't quite make it, versus the Rambam uses the expression that it's not roi for a person to be Metayel L'Pardes. So the Rambam uses it, but Rebbe explains in this Hadron, it was the first Hadron after the first cycle of Rambam in Tavshin Mem Hei, that L'tayel b'pardes would mean like a person strolls around in there, as opposed to Nichnas or b'pardes means what we're saying over here, that they actually went in and spent a considerable amount of time there, and that's, as we're seeing from this Gemara, can be a very hazardous thing. Anyway, Elohein, Ben Azai, Ben Zoyma, V'achev, Rabbi Akiv. Ben Aze and Ben Zoyma, they never got smicha, which is why we don't usually call them Reb. Their first names both were Shimon. Most of the time in the Gemara, they're not called by their first names, just their last names. Acher, we're going to talk about later. His original name was Elisha ben Avuya. We have him in Pirkei Avos, and he's mentioned in one or two other places. And Reb Akiv. So Marshall also adds the detail, by the way, based on the Oruch, that in particular, the Pardes over here is a level of Gan Eden, which was reserved for the Tzaddikim. We talked about before in the Sugya, we had the level, the seventh level of heaven, which is Aravos, where the Neshama to the Tzaddikim are stored, among other things. So it means they went up to there, or at least like Tosfos says, they perceive themselves having gone up to there. So Omar Lahem Rabbi Akiva. So Rabbi Akiva says to them, when you get to the point where you're going to see there's an area where there are pure, clear marble stones and they resemble water. Be careful. Don't say water, water. In other words, don't mistake those translucent marble stones for water. And based on Marsha brings over here from a Sefer Yoshan, which is a Sefer from one of the Rishonim, Rabbeinu Todras Halevi, that explains In particular, that so he goes and explains what exactly it means, what it means they went into the paradis, and what this whole business about mayim mayim. So various mafarshim explain, in other words, that there is a, you have over there a point where there is a, these marble stones. It looks like there's rip, actually it's hakosiv, brings from the aruch, that there's a place over there. It looks like there's ripples upon ripples of millions of little wavelets of water. And you're going to think that that's actual water. You have to be careful. Rabbi Akiva says to them, don't say that. Mishum dechtiv, because the pasuk says, Dover shkorim lo yikin l'neged enai. A person who speaks lies will not stand in front of my presence, in front of my eyes. So in other words, to say, even though you're not, it wouldn't be a deliberate lie, of course, it would just be a mistake that you're saying you're mistaking the avnei shayish for water, but that would be a sheker. And at the level that we're going at, you have to be careful of that kind of thing. So again, the Aruch and most of the Mefarshim following him explain on a nigladika level, to the extent that we understand this Gemara on a nigladika level, that it means, in other words, that he's telling them that don't look at this marble and think that it's not marble, it's water, because again, that would be a sheker. The Arizal gives a whole different taich on it. The Arizal says, the vote is, there is in fact water over there, but he's telling them, you have the Mayim Elyonim and the Mayim Tachtonim. Be careful, he says, that you don't think that those are two separate things. Now, on the face of it, they are. From our perception here in Olam HaAsiya, we think they are. We have in the Pesukim, Vayavdil Alekim, Vayasa Alekim HaSarakiya, Vayavdil, that the Ebishta separated them. But you have to realize, Rabbi Akiva is saying to them, according to the way the Arizal explains it, the level we're going up to, you should realize that all that mayim is really one thing. And there are various explanations in different places in Chassidus of what exactly that represents. For example, there's a mayimur in Torah Ur, where the Alter Rebbe explains, Torah, we know, is compared to water. So on the one hand, we can look at there's the Torah as it is, the Chochmah of the Ebishter L'mayla, and there's the Torah as it comes down here on earth, and you might think that there's not really that much of a connection between them. And Rabbi Akiva is telling them, if I care, realize it really is all the same thing, just on different levels. In any case, so what happened to them? Ben Azai hates its mace. Ben Azai looked, he gazed too much beyond what he could bear, and he passed away. And Marsha brings from the Sefer Yoshan that Ben Azai, his neshama, had such a yearning for Elikus with Ava Rabba that it left his body. So to put it in terms that we talk about in Chassidus, we have the concept of Rotzei V'Shoiv. We had before, earlier in the sugya, we had about the Chayes HaKodesh that they described by Chayes Rotzei V'Shoiv. So and that's the dynamic that there's supposed to be in every neshama, where you have rotze, where you're running to be close to Elikus, and then shtoiv, and you return and realize that the Eibishter wants you here, a neshama and a guf to do mice of a poil. So Ben Azai, in other words, had rotze without shtoiv. He expired on an avar rabba to the Eibishter, like Nodav and Aviv. But all of our kotzav omer, so on him the pasuk says yoker be'enei Hashem amob sela chasidav. It's very hard, so to speak. Yoker means precious, but it also means hard and difficult. It's very difficult in Hashem's eyes that his chasidim pass away, because Rashi points out he was very young. But tilo yirani hardem b'choy, a person can't see Elikus and be able to at that level and be able to live, and therefore it had to be that his neshama left his body. On the other hand, Marsha brings from the Sefer Yoshan, from Reb Todras Shalevi, who says, no, that's not what it means, that he saw Kilirani Adam Machai. What are you going to tell us? Ben Azai got to a level beyond Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe couldn't see. Moshe was told Kilirani Adam Machai, and Ben Azai was able to see that level. All Moshe was able to see was Vera Yisrael Tachorai. No, what it means is, again, that he got up to the point, again, that he got to the point of klois nefesh of rotze without shoiv, and therefore his neshama left. That's Ben Azai. Ben Zoyma hates its v'nifka. Ben Zoyma also looked in the direction of the Shechina, v'nifka, and he was harmed. Rashi says nitra fadaito, he went crazy. On some level, he didn't have the understanding, the clear understanding that he had before. But all of our cost of omer, the pasuk applies to him. What we have, page Lamadalad in Chagiga. On him, the pasuk says, by way of metaphor, dvash matzasa, if you found honey, echol dayecha, eat as much as you can take. But in other words, don't overindulge on it. Kentis ba'enu, because otherwise you might be overfilled with it, baki oisoi, and you're going to throw it up. You're going to vomit it up. So in other words, here, Ben Zoma went too far in trying to perceive levels of elokus that he wasn't ready for, and the result was that he went crazy from it. Eitz Yosef brings over here from Moreh Nevuchim, where the Rambam gives a mashal that, honey is very, very sweet. And in fact, the fact is, a little bit of it is good, and it stimulates the appetite, but too much makes you nauseous. So the same way, in other words, too much of delving into the paradis over here can cause a person that it affects him negatively, as it did over here to Ben Zoma. Anaf Yosef gives a further extended mashal of it, that you have a king makes a suda for his servants, and he puts in front of them all kinds of foods, as well as he puts in front of them various kinds of sweets and honey. So the smart ones eat the food, and they fill up on that, and then they eat the honey as a little bit of a dessert. Whereas the foolish people fill up on the honey, and then afterwards they go and start eating the food, and then they end up throwing it all up, and they gain nothing from it. And the nimshal is, in other words, that a wise person fills himself up with the bread and meat and everything of nigla, of Torah, of Torah san nigla, whatever Yid needs to know, and afterwards he has the dvash as, so to speak, a dessert afterwards that helps sweeten and helps digest and incorporate into him everything that he learned so far. Whereas Ben Zoma was saying, did the other way around. He started with the honey, and he had too much of the honey. And then when he's trying afterwards to learn things in Torah, then it doesn't go, because now his mind has been damaged by it. Acher kitzitz banatiyos. Acher, the third one of the group, he ended up cutting down the plant. Which means, it actually explains further on, since the Gemara has used the metaphor of nichnasu l'pardes, that they went into the orchard, therefore, the metaphor that we're saying that Acher, so to continue with the analogy, that Acher became an apikoros, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, then you could say that he cut down the plants, he cut down the trees in this pardes. He became an apikoros, as the Gemara is going to go on to say in detail what his mistake was and where he went wrong. Rabbi Akiva nichnas b'shalom v'yotz b'shalom. Rabbi Akiva went in peace and came out in peace. He's the only one who survived it intact and became greater for it. So given that we said, especially Ben Azai, we said, had close anefesh, he had rotze without shoiv, and the other ones also, the vortez, it talks about in various places in Chassidus, the three of them, they went in a way where they look at it that nichnasu l'pardes is to go completely beyond the world and not have to do with the world. So therefore, each one of them ended up leaving the world in a different way. Ben Azai begashmius, so he passed away. Ben Zoma mentally, and Acher spiritually. Whereas Rabbi Akiva nichnas b'shalom, to begin with, he went in with the intention of making shalom, the pamal yishamayla, the pamal yishamata. He's doing it in order to bring down what he's bringing down from the pardes into our world and use it to enhance the connection between the Oyonim and the Tachtonim in himself and in the world at large, and therefore Yotze B'Shalom, and therefore he came out of it safely and peacefully. At the end of Soto, when you have all of the descriptions over there, when it says Mishemes Reploni, then Botlu this and so forth, so it mentions Ben Azai was the last of the Shakdonim, the people who are very diligent to constantly learn Torah. You want to mention elsewhere that he never, as we said, he never even had smicha, but he was one of the top Talmidim in the yeshiva in Yavne. He was always there ready to learn. So when he passed away as a result of this experience, then that kind of tremendous diligence in Torah was lost. And as far as Ben Zoma, it says that they both were darshanim. He was a great darshan. He knew how to darshan psukim and derive halachas from them, as we're going to have an example now, in the Gemara. And when he passed away, then the depth of being able to do that was lost. So in other words, the point is that as a result of this nichnasu l'pardes, tremendous things were lost from the Jewish people that we should have had otherwise. So the Gemara tells Shalowet Ben Zoma. They asked Ben Zoma the following question. Now, on the face of it, what it means is the Gemara is going to give a couple of examples where they asked him back when he was still normal, before all of this happened, different things in halacha, unusual questions, and he gave answers to them. And it goes to show what a tremendous Talmid Chacham he was. On the other, one of the Rishonim, Rav Avraham Min Ha'Hor, brings from Rashi. We don't have it in our Rashi in front of us, but he says that these are questions that actually were asked to Ben Zoma in Shamayim during the time, the Pashtus, during this time of Nichnasu L'Pardes, or maybe after. Anyway, so they asked him, the first question they asked him is, Maula Sarusi Kalva, are you allowed to sterilize a dog? Now, the point of the question is like this. Where do we know you're not allowed to sterilize or castrate people or animals? So we learn because the pasuk says, when it mentions in connection with korbanos, it says various kinds of animals that are castrated or moch v'chatos, not a pekaros, you're not allowed to bring as a korban. And then it continues, v'artachem lo sasu. And in your land, you should not do it. So we understand that it means that you're not allowed to bring such an animal as a korban, but you're not allowed to do such a thing to an animal in the first place. The question is, it's one thing, fine, we can understand that applies to animals that could be brought as korbanos. We understand further it could apply even to animals or people that themselves cannot be brought as korbanos, but their monetary value could. So a balmum, for example, you makdash a balmum, then fine, you sell it and you use the money to buy a korban, an animal that's tamim. You donate a horse to Beis Habayis, same thing. They'll sell it and they'll use the money for the upkeep of the Beis Mikdash. So ultimately it has some connection with the Beis Mikdash. Mashenan, same thing, a person. Mashenan, a dog, not only we have in last week's parasha, not only you can't, obviously you can't bring a dog as a korban, but you can't even bring the exchange of it. Like, Sovi Esnan Zono Mechir Kelev. So you can't even exchange a dog for a sheep, for example, and then bring the sheep as a korban. So given that a dog is so far removed from anything that has to do with korbanos, then maybe the din that the prosuk is saying in connection with korbanos wouldn't apply to it, and you would be allowed to do such an operation to a dog. So Ben Zoma answers them, the pasuk says on it, over artachem loisasu, and in your land you should not do it. Now it doesn't mean that the dinim of sirus apply only in Eretz Yisrael. We have a general rule, the Mishnah tells us in Kiddushin, only mitzvahs that are mitzvahs at tluyas ba'aretz, only ones that have to do with the land and the agriculture of Eretz Yisrael apply only in Eretz Yisrael. Anything else, which is chovetz aguf, applies anywhere in the world. So what does it mean? Over artachem loisasu means kol sheba artachem loisasu. Any creature that could conceivably be in your land of Eretz Yisrael, you're not allowed to do this to. So yes, it would include dogs as well. They have nothing to do with korbanos, but that's what over artachem tells you. Okay. Another one, Shalorot Ben Zoma, Besula Sheibra Ma'ol Kohen Gadol. Another question they asked him: what if you have a besula who's pregnant? Would she be able to marry a Kohen Gadol? Now, we know the Kohen Gadol has to marry a B'sula, but who is she with B'sula? So now, Rashi says there are two possibilities. You could have where she's pregnant, but she says, I still have my B'sulim. Or you could have that the Kohen Gadol married her, she's a B'sula, and he married her, didn't know that she's already pregnant, and later on it turns out that she's pregnant. The point of the question is, as the Gemara is going to say, is it possible that she could be pregnant and her B'sulim still be intact? So, mi chashinin l'ho de Shmuel, do we have to be concerned, meaning here, concerned in the positive sense, do we have to take into consideration the possibility of what Shmuel says, d'oma Shmuel, yeah, Shmuel is a couple of generations later, but in other words, we're mentioning this because Shmuel said this about it, yochelni livo kama b'sulet, so b'ilis b'loy dam. Shmuel says, I have the capability of having relations many times with a b'sula, and no blood will come out because the b'sulim will not be broken. He had the ability to, the Gemara talks about it in Ksubas and in other places, that it is possible to go in on a certain angle then in such a way that the basulim don't break. So the membrane of the basulim doesn't completely cover the oisim makam, otherwise, for example, a girl until she's married wouldn't be able to have dam nida. So there are openings in it, and Shmuel knew how to, so to speak, take advantage of those openings. So therefore, conceivably, a girl could become pregnant and still be a basula. So do we say that? And in that case, then we can take her at her word that she is in fact a basula. Or maybe what Shmuel says is so uncommon that no, we can't rely on it. We have to assume any girl who's pregnant necessarily has had her basulim, if not completely removed, at least damaged, and therefore she's not a complete basula anymore, and she can't marry a Kohen Gadol. So this is the question they asked Ben Zoma. So he answers them, the Shmuel lo shchiach. It is true that what Shmuel's saying is very uncommon. You can't take her at her, so if I care, in other words, the question would be like this. If Shmuel had done, if for example, she'd had relations with a man who could do like Shmuel would, even though the Basulim are fully physically intact, nevertheless, she wouldn't be considered a Basula because she has had relations. So now that's the question. In other words, do we have to take into consideration what Shmuel's saying, that she might well have had relations and her Basulim are still intact or not? So he answers them, the Shmuel is Shmiach. What Shmuel what Shmuel described is uncommon. No, it's very realistically, it's not going to be that. But there's another possibility we have to take into consideration. Shema ba'ambati ibra. She may have become pregnant in a bathtub. In other words, at one point, a man may have bathed in there and produced some zera that came out into the water, and now she bathes there and it goes in. So there's no be'ila. She would still be considered a besola because there's never been any relations, but now she's pregnant. It's brought, by the way, in Sfarim. And we had a few days ago, we had a quotation in the Gemara from Sefer Ben Sira. It's brought in an Aleph Beis Ben Sira, and from there it's brought by various poskim that that was exactly how he was conceived. It's brought over there that Yumiya was at one point the Goyim put him in a situation where he became a Balkeri in a bathtub over there, and afterwards his daughter bathed over there and she became pregnant, and the child was Ben Sira, so he's both a son and a grandson of Yumiya in effect. The posts can actually talk about, so would such a child, in that case, would he be considered a mamzer? After all, his father and mother are father and daughter, or would we say that not because there was no be'ila? And then, now you're going to say, it's very unrealistic, but nowadays it becomes a real issue as far as the whole matter of artificial insemination. So the Moshe and the Tzitz Eliezer and many, many neo-contemporary poskim use that whole story and the Gemara over here as a basis for working out these dinim of what exactly are the dinim of IVF and all these kinds of things in terms of whether the child, if for example, you have artificial insemination by a donor rather than by the husband, would it make the child a mamzer or not? So this whole story involving Ben Sira is one of the major things that's brought up in that connection. Anyway, so Ben Zoymer is saying, in short, that yes, it is possible, it's a remote possibility, but it's still a possibility that she is, that she's pregnant without her besulim ever having been broken and without there having been a be'ila, namely, not like Shmuel says that there would have been a be'ila, but not the besulim broken, but rather there was never a be'ila in the first place because the conception took place in a bath. So therefore, yes, he's saying, so she would be able to marry a Kohen Gadol. Well, the question is, well, I'm a Shmuel called Shechvat Zera Sheini Yorek Chetz Eni Mazriya. Didn't Shmuel also say that any Shechvat Zera that doesn't shoot out like an arrow is not going to be able to fertilize? And here it's floating around in the water. The answer is Duma Me'ikra Nami Yorek Chetz Avoy. The answer is when it first came out of the man, it was Yorek Chetz. The fact that now it's floating around in the water doesn't impair its, eventually it would impair, of course, but for right now, it doesn't prevent it from being able to fertilize. And therefore, that's what you could happen. That's what you could have Bambati Ibra. The point is, again, this is another example of a completely off-the-wall question, which they asked Ben Zoymer, and he had an answer to right off the bat. So the Gemara continues, Tanan Abanan, Maisib Rabbi Yishuv ben Chananya, Shoy Omer Agav Maila Bahar HaBayis. It happened once that Rabbi Yishuv ben Chananya was standing on a step in the Har HaBayis. Obviously, this is when the second Beit Mikdash was still standing. V'ra'ohu Ben Zoymer, and then Ben Zoymer saw Rabbi Yishuv. Now, Ben Zoymer, we said before, was one of the Talmidim. Rabbi Yeshua already has smicha at that point. He's not the leader of the generation yet. Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai was still alive at the time, but at least he's on a much higher level than Ben Zoma. V'loy omad miponov, and Ben Zoma did not stand for Rabbi Yeshua with derech eretz like he should. Omaloi, so Rabbi Yeshua says to him, Me'ayin ol ayin Ben Zoma. Oh, Ben Zoma, where are you coming from and where are you going? In other words, Rashi says, What are you distracted with? What are you deep in thought with right now that you didn't notice me and stand up for me? Marshot has a different explanation that Rabbi Yeshua thought that Ben Zoma didn't stand up because first of all, Marshot brings from the Yerushalmi that he was actually a different version of the story. Rabbi Yeshua was walking on the road. Ben Zoma came in his direction and they met up. And Ben Zoma did not say Shalom Aleichem to him. Or the other way around, Rabbi Yeshua said Shalom Aleichem to him, and Ben Zoma did not answer back Shalom Alecha Rebbe Yomori. So then Rabbi Yeshua says, what's going on over here? So Marsha explains then, it's possible that Rabbi Yeshua, here we're saying, Rashi is saying Rabbi Yeshua realized that Ben Zoma is deep in thought, so he's asking him, what are you contemplating? Marsha says, could also mean that he's saying to Ben Zoma, you're acting like a Baal Gaiva. Don't you realize, may I in Basel Anat HaHoylech? So what are you acting like a Baal Gaiva for? So Omalei, sort of Ben Zoma answers, according to Rashi, I'll tell you what I was contemplating, and according to Marsha, I'm not acting like a Baal Gai, but I was deep in thought. I was gazing and considering about Maisa Bereshis, about the separation between the Mayim HaYonim and the Mayim HaTachtonim. So again, you have, you know, by my tibereshis, by yafta the kimas arakia, by yavdo ben amayim hashem in tachat arakia, ben amayim hashem al arakia. So how much actual space is there between them? So Ben Zoima says, I was thinking into it, the in ben zelazel, gimel atvoyot bovad, the space between them is only the thickness of 3 fingers. In other words, in short, he's saying that the rakia is 3 tfachim thick. As the pasuk says, "V'ruach alekim merachefes al pnei hamoyim," because even earlier in Ma'aseh Bereishis, it says the spirit of Hashem, the wind of Hashem, was hovering over the water. So we have to understand, says Ben Zoima, "Ki yonazu shemarachefes al paneha." It's like when a mother dove is fluttering and hovering over her children who are in the nest. B'negas in a negas, she's just touching them but not really touching them. There's a separation of a few etzbois between them. So the same way, therefore, we have to understand that between the ruach and the mayim, there's 3 etzbos. Omalah Rabbi Yeshua l'tamidim adayin ben zomim b'chot. But Rabbi Yeshua told his talmidim, maybe at the same time, maybe afterwards, you should know ben zomim is still on the outside, meaning he hasn't really grasped the full meaning of ma'aseh bereishis. After all, this pasuk "Beruach alekim" is talking on the first day of Ma'aseh Bereishis. The separation between the Mayim Elyonim and Mayim Tachtonim took place on the second day. So, what is a pasuk about "Beruach alekim" have anything to do with the separation that took place on the next day of Ma'aseh Bereishis? So, therefore, he says basically Ben Zoima doesn't know what he's talking about. What does he mean by "b'machutz"? Some Mephoshim say that this story happened after the story of Abba Shenichnas Leparadis, and we're saying that Ben Zoima Nitra Fadaita, that his mind was muddled by what he saw because he couldn't absorb it properly. So now Rabbi Yeshua is telling us Talmidim, you know why Ben Zoima got it wrong, you know why he's not understanding the Psukim, because he's Bachutz, he's outside of his normal intelligence. He's lost his Seichel, and therefore he can't understand the Psukim properly. On the other hand, the Rambam, near the end of Mor Nevuchim, gives a very interesting extended moshul to explain what Rabbi Yeshua says. He says, you have to imagine, there's a king in his palace. Now, you have subjects to the king that B'chalal don't even know, they're outside the city, they have no idea there's even a palace. Then you have people in the city who, they're walking in the wrong direction. Then you have people who know they want to come and see the king and they're walking in the right direction towards the palace. They haven't gotten in yet. Then you have the ones who get in and they're going through the various halls and whatnot, trying to find the king. You have the ones who need to go through the guards and the ministers and whatnot, et cetera, et cetera. And then finally you have the Yechidus Segula who are able to come in front of the king's presence. So the Rambam says the first group represents, for example, the uncivilized goyim, who have no concept of that there's even an Eibishter in the world at all. The second group, the ones who are going in the wrong direction, means the ones who have a wrong conception of Hashem, the members of various religions that believe in Hashem in a corrupted way, and so on and so forth. Then you have the ones who are walking towards the palace, is a yid who naturally wants to be close to the Eibishter, but he's an Amoretz and he doesn't know where to go, b'chola b'chola, until you get higher and higher levels among Jewish people, until you get to those rare few who get to go in front of the Eibishter's presence, representing the ones who are able to thoroughly master Ma'aseh Bereishis and Ma'aseh Merkab. So therefore he says, when Rabbi Yeshua is saying, Adayin ben Zoyman Bachot, he's saying he's in the category of the guys who are still looking for the door of the palace and they can't find it. So he doesn't even know Ma'aseh Bereishis yet, let alone Ma'aseh Merkab. So the Gemara goes on to explain, so Taka, how much of a distance is there between Mayim and Moyim? Marsha has a very, very long explanation over here that explains, really there's a few different ways of explaining what exactly is the Rakia. When we say that the Eibishter made a Rakia and separated between the Mayim Elyonim and Mayim Tachtonim, what exactly is that Rakia in our terms? So, for example, you have the Ramban holds that it means the Galgalim. Those are the spheres, the orbits of the various planets and stars and whatnot. Then, on the other hand, the Rambam explains that it means the atmosphere where clouds form. And then you have different other explanations among different Rishonim and Achronim exactly what is the Rakia in our human terms. So now Marsha goes on, Barichus over here, that Ben Zoima's view of the matter versus Rabbi Yeshua's versus the different Amiroyim that are going to give opinions over here. The underlying argument may be, what exactly do we define as the Rakia? So when Rabbi Yeshua is saying, Adayin Ben Zoima Bachot, he means, in other words, fine, if he's talking about a certain definition of Rakia, then maybe you could say he's correct. But that's not the real definition of Rakia, and therefore he's still only Bachot, he's still outside of knowing the actual truth of the matter. again, given what given that point from the Arizal before about Mayim Mayim, that that he said that Rabbi Akiva was warning them, don't think that there is that the Mayim Elyonim and Mayim Tachtonim are really two separate things. They're all really one thing. Then here you have, in the same vein, Ben Zoima is thinking there is a separation between them, meaning he's still making the mistake of thinking that there's Mayim Mayim, and therefore Rabbi Yeshua says, Rabbi Yeshua, who was already familiar with Ma'aseh Merkavah, as we had the story yesterday, then he says, no, he's still Bachutz. He's still making that mistake of thinking Mayim Mayim rather than realizing that it's really all one thing. Well, how much of a separation is there between the Mayim, between one Mayim and the other? So Amar Rav Chiya, Rav Acha bar Yaakov, Kim Lo Nima, just a hair's breadth. But Rabbanan Amri Kiguda de Gamla. The Chachamim say, let the Rabbanan say, like the planks of a bridge. When you build a bridge and you put one plank of wood and another, there's going to be a tiny little space between one and the next. That little space is the space between Mayim Lamayim. Mazutravi, Temer of Ashi, Rav Asiyama, Ketre Glimi Deprisi Adodi. It's like two pieces of clothing that are spread one on top of the other. Ra'amrila, others say, even closer, Ketre Kasi Desfichi Adodi, Desfichi Adodi. When you have like one cup and then you have it upside down and then you have another cup placed directly on top of it, and the one nests inside the other, that's how close the Mayim Elyonim and Mayim Tachtonim are. So each of them is expressing in his own way, in other words, that the Mayim Elyonim and Mayim Tachtonim are a lot closer together than Ben Zoima was thinking with his three etzbois, which is why Rabbi Yeshua criticized his understanding of it. So there is, you can talk about, there are different madregas, but you should realize the difference between them is taka, a very subtle one. And Beruchnius, we have, for example, that you have the Olamot, you have Atzilus and Bria and so on and so forth, and each one feeds into the next one. Malchus of Atzilus becomes Keser of Bria. Malchus of Bria becomes Keser of Yetzira. So in that sense, especially like this last one with the nested cup, like each one nests into the next one. Each one incorporates the next one within it in potential. Okay. Now, we said, Acha kitzitz banatiyas. We said that Acha cut down the plants, meaning that he denied some important thing, some important principle of Yiddishkeit, and he became an apikur. All of Akosav Omer, the Pasuk describes what happened with him with the expression, Al titinas picha lachdias versaracha, don't allow your mouth to cause your flesh to sin. So in other words, his mouth said something, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, that amounted to a denial of the achdus of the Eibishter. And with that, he wounded himself. Now, Maharsha brings, the Yerushalmi tells this whole story about Acher in the Sugya as well. There's Yerushalmi on Masechta Chagiga as well, and it tells the story over there. There the Yerushalmi refers this pasuk to a later part. The Gemara, the Bavli over here, is going to tell how later on Acher was going and trying to talk Jewish kids out of learning Torah. So the Yerushalmi applies that pasuk to that now he's with his mouth, he's causing himself to lose all his chut. But Maharsha says here in our context of our Gemara, it's just the fact that at first he said something wrong about the achdus of the Eved. And he explains that basically what it is, as the Gemara is going to go on to explain, and as Maharsha and other Mephoshim explain, he made the mistake of thinking that there were two gods, Rahman al-Islam, as the Gemara is going to go on to tell. So now what happened was, the pasuk goes like this. The whole pasuk goes al titnas pichalachdias besarecha. The pasuk says, at the beginning that the Gemara is quoting over here, don't allow your mouth to cause your flesh to sin. And the pasuk continues, val toimel lifnei malach tishgogahi. Don't say in front of the malach that it was a mistake. Lama yiktzef alekim al koylecha. Why should the Eibishter to be angry at your voice? V'chibel as masiyadecha, and destroy the work of your hand. So in context, and the Gemara elsewhere darshens this pasuk about, for example, a person makes a neder and doesn't keep it, that it causes, he brings down anger from the Eibishter on him. Here Maharsha says, the Gemara is darshening the pasuk basically like this. Acher spoke wrongly about the achdus of the Eibishter. Now, don't say in front of the malach that he saw, that he mistook, as the Gemara is going to say, malach matat, that he mistook for a second god. Don't say it was a mistake, because at that level of nichnas to l'paradis, you're not supposed to make mistakes. So don't say it was a mistake, and I should get away with it. Loma yiktzef elekim al kalecha, what's going to happen? The Eibishter is going to be angry at your voice, that you express something that you believe in two gods, the chibel of masiyadecha, and he's going to ruin the work of your hand, because as the Gemara is going to go on to say, all his chutim that he had ever done up to that point were erased from Hashem's books, so to speak. So therefore, that's why the Gemara is bringing this pasuk, the beginning of this pasuk, in this context. So Maihi Chaza, what exactly did Maihi, what happened to Acher? When he was up there in the paradise, Chaza Matat, he saw the Malach Matat, and as usual, we don't say his name in full, as the Arizal says, that he was given Rishus for a certain time of day, L'meisav, to sit down, U'l'michtav S'chusa de Yisrael, and to write down the S'chusim of the Jewish people. Malach Matat, and there's many places in Chassidus where it talks about that he's actually one of the lower level Malachim, so to speak. He's in Olam HaYitzirah, but still that's tremendously higher than anything that we could imagine. We've shown him bring that Amban brings, for example, that the Gemara elsewhere brings that he's called Sore Shel Olam. Basically, the whole Hashpa that the Eibishter sends down to the world goes through him. So now he's seen that he has the Rishu, that he's being told to sit and write. Omar, Acher thinks to himself, Gmiri, well, we know b'Kabbalah, De'ein l'mayla lo'yamido lo'yeshiva v'le'kino v'le'tachrut, l'mayla, by Hashem or by the Malachim, there's no standing or sitting because they don't have actual bodies, v'le'kino, there's no jealousy, v'le'tachrut, there's no competition, v'le'uref, v'le'ipui, there's no back of the head, there's no tiredness. Marsha explains in particular, for example, we have as far as the Chayis HaKodesh. Yes, you have that the Chayis HaKodesh, the Malachim, are described as standing, but you never have them described as sitting. And for example, the Chayis HaKodesh, we learned before, that they have faces on all four sides, so they have no back of a head. So, but he thinks now he sees Malach Matat sitting. Shema Chas B'Shalom Shtei Rishuyis Yesh B'Shamayim or Hein. Maybe it means that there are two Rishuyis, two gods in Shamayim. In fact, some Mefarshim talk about that he thought that you have the Eibishter as the higher god, and then Matat is the lower one. Rachman al-Islam. It actually, the Gemara elsewhere mentions Bechlau. The Gemara elsewhere mentions that Matat is, first of all, the gematria of his name is the same as Shin Dalad Yud. But also the Gemara mentions elsewhere that he was actually the Malach that Hashem proposed to send in Parshas Mishpatim, that Hashem says, I'm going to send a Malach to lead you into Eretz Yisrael, and Moshe says, nothing doing him. And the Psukim say over there, he shomer b'koyle al tamer boy, the Gemara explains, it means don't confuse him with the Eibishter. As great a Malach as he is, don't think that he himself is the Eibishter, he's only a Nivra. So now Acher made the mistake of equating him with the Eibishter. Rashi mentions on the pasuk, yeah, it's based on a Gemara in Sanhedrin, I think. Yeah. Miyad apkula matat umachyua shifin pulsi denura. So right away they took out matat and struck him with 60 blows of fire. Now, some of Poshim say 60, often the Gemara uses 60 as just a large indefinite number. But there are Rishonim who bring from a Tosfos that say like this: the Beis Din Shalmata gives a person 39 malchus because the youngest age a person can get malchus is 13. So 3 malchus for every year. In based in Shamayla, they punish a person only when he's 20. Therefore, they're based in Shamayla, punishes with 60, again, 3 for every year. What's the vort over here? On the face of it, Matat didn't do anything wrong. He was being told to sit. Marsha explains the vort is precisely because Acher had made this terrible mistake. Therefore, he has to be shown that Matat is being punished. So that, in other words, not that Matat did anything wrong, but he needs to be shown that Matat is only a Nivra like any other Malach, and that he's getting punished, and that ought to make him realize, wait a minute, what was I thinking over there? Unfortunately, he didn't. So therefore, the result was, they said to Matat, my time of Kichazisya, le komas mikamei, when you saw Acher, why don't you stand up in his presence, and then that would have avoided the whole issue. If the Matat was given permission to erase all the schusim of Acher. Yotza Basko v'omra, and a Basko came out and announced, Shuvu vonim shovavim, return you rebellious children, chutz me Acher, except for Acher, she yoda kvodi, that he knew my glory, he was nichnas paradis, umorad bi, and yet he rebelled against me. Now, on the face of it, that means he can't do tshuva. On the other hand, there's many places that it explains that this was actually a test for him. It means the Eibishter is not going to help him. Ain't mastikin b'yodei lasis truva, but dochak v'nichnas, as the Alter Rebbe in Tanya, ain't l'chod dover sh'omri v'shnei truva, he should have realized that this is a test for him. In fact, there's a famous verse that says, there's Gemara in Pesachim that says, everything that the Balabais tells you, except for leave. If the Balabas tells you to leave, don't. That relates to this Gemara over here. The Balabas, the Eibishter, the Baskel, is telling Acher, leave. I don't want you, Truva. But Acher should have realized, you don't listen to the Balabas on that. Chutz mitzei, I still have the opportunity to do Truva. But he didn't, as the Gemara goes on, and we'll continue with the continuation of the story tomorrow. So that's, we said that Ben Azai primarily was rotten without, was rotten without Shoev. That's why he passed away. His neshama left him from the rotten of coming close to Elokus, but too close. Okay. Yom Yom Mashiach Ha'Gola, Yudgimel level. We know that the Friedrich Rebbe explains in a Maimer that why is Malach Mashiach called David, Va'abi David Malach Aleihem, because David represents Anova and Bittul. David was a king, but he called himself Oni Ve'evin, and Melech HaMashiach is going to be the same thing. He's going to be on the highest, greatest level, and he's still going to have the ultimate level of Anova and Bittul, whereas it says in Hayom Yom, he's going to be teaching even Anoshim Pshutim. So now, the Rebbe went on to say that one of the things that brings closer and faster B'yes HaMashiach is exactly that, that we teach and then spread out Torah, Hafotas HaMayonis, Nigla, and Pnimiyas HaTorah, to everyone, even to Anoshim Pshutim, in a way of Anova and Bittul, meaning not, I'm great and I'm going to condescend to you to learn to, with you, but Fakir. And it's not even that it's going to be because it's going to make me greater and more knowledgeable or anything like that. It's going to be as, even on a dachlistic level. You're going to think, I'm going to do it in order that I learn it better from my Talmidim. The real reason should be just for the sake of the Makabla. And that's the true Anava. Continuing with Halachas of Shabbos. On Shabbos, you can go outside on Shabbos wearing a talis that has tzitzis on it. The tzitzis are bottle to the beged because they're part of the noy of the beged. But you can't just put it around your neck as a scarf, again, because that's not the normal way of wearing a talis. And in addition, you also have issues if one of the tzitzis is if a tzitzis on it is ripped, you can't wear it anyway because you can't wear a beged with dalet kanfas without tzitzis. But in addition, you'd also have that those tzitzis would be a masri because you are intending to fix them, and right now they're not. Then right now they're not a noy for the beged because they're not yotzei to the mitzvah.